Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Oh wow. I don't know if the mics caught that.
I hope not.
Matt is pissed.
We just lost all of our listeners because Matt's mad at me again for some god unknown reason.
Well, we asked if he was ready and you were like, no one cares.
Yeah.
So
that's just me being truthful.
Well, first, welcome back to the show, Miss Darren. It's been a minute.
It's good to be back.
Ooh, I love the little jingle.
Yeah, thank you.
Hopefully the lawyers don't, you know, ding you for copyright infringement of wherever
because
that
my voice
from.
Is like an angel and I don't,
right.
You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
I could probably cut a couple records from this and
obviously.
I don't want anyone profiting. That isn't me.
Obviously. So, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, welcome back. Sorry you couldn't make it to CrimeCon, but I wanted to let you know I'm reporting back. Many people were asking where you were.
Let me just say that, you know, I saw all your snaps with Nancy Grace. It looked mm-hmm. so fun. I was definitely having a lot of FOMO. And when I was right. listening back to the episode of you interviewing everyone and mm-hmm. you talked to the fans at the end,
yeah.
you asked somebody, you know, who's a better host, John or Darren? And I felt like...
Yeah.
You know, she said it really, you know, she said John,
sure.
which, you know, you're great.
Sure, thank
but,
you.
But, like,
thank
I
you.
Feel like because I wasn't there, no one gave me a fair shot, and
that's
I just
true.
Want you to acknowledge that.
So what you're saying is you didn't get a fair trial.
I didn't get a fair, I am
you
Scott
need
Peterson.
Another trial,
yes,
exactly.
I didn't get a, all the evidence wasn't there,
and
we didn't present everything.
I tampered with the jury.
Exactly. You
whatever
you
that
slipped
is.
Him a 20.
Absolutely, to say my name.
So I just want you to acknowledge
that. That's a fair
that.
Point. And
thank
I,
you.
I think maybe next year if we go to CrimeCon, you can have your say.
I think it's better to say you're allegedly the better host,
yeah.
so that way we don't get any, you know,
precisely.
The lawyers aren't pissed at us, because
right.
that's not a fact.
That's a good point.
You know what I mean?
Well, thank you for that note.
Yes,
and
that
course...
was my big note.
But yes, if you guys are just now tuning in and you haven't listened to any other episodes, where have you been? You want to check out episode 22 for our full recap of CrimeCon, including interviews with Nancy Grace, Kelly Siegler, Aphrodite Jones, as well as a bunch of fans that stopped by the podcast booth.
You did such a good job interviewing
thank
everyone.
You.
Were you nervous at all? Like, did you have all your questions? I felt like Nancy Grace was
Nancy
really the
Grace.
Big get because
yeah.
everyone seems to know her, and she's like Miss Crime.
Yeah,
I don't
no,
know
she
how
was
to
the
put
queen.
It.
She was the queen of CrimeCon.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't nervous, but I was. You know, when I was speaking with Nancy, there a small little like crowd kind of formed because anytime you see Nancy Grace. You have to stop what you're doing
of
and
course.
Run over there.
Yeah, sure.
And so that was a little bit unnerving because she kept kind of like giving me little jabs throughout the middle of the interview.
And she was flirting with you a little
I
bit, John.
I think she might have been. I don't know.
Did you tell her that you were a gay man? A proud gay man?
I didn't, but I think that she would have probably figured that out and was totally fine with that.
If Nancy Grace wanted to kiss you, would you let her? That's
yes,
the question.
First
okay.
of all, yes.
The fact that you thought about it, it's like...
No, I was just trying to like process the question. But that let's save that for CrimeCon 2018. Let's
in
do
Nashville,
that.
I
exactly,
heard. Okay,
yeah.
I'm going to be there next year, I promise.
So quick recap, you were on vacation.
Yes.
And I wanted to say thank you for the little dancing hula girl that you got me that is solar powered.
Yeah,
from
I mean...
Barcelona.
From Barcelona.
Yeah. How was it?
Technically, it's a flamenco dancer
oh, sorry.
Because that's what's in Spain.
Spain, gotcha.
Yeah. Spain was amazing. Had a lot of fun. Didn't see any real crimes go down. But, you know, I was very worried about theft. We all managed to keep our passports. All managed to keep our wits about
us.
As tourists do. Yeah. It was wonderful and great. But I had a severe case of FOMO from CrimeCon for sure. And I'm glad you held down the fort for both of us.
I did.
So thank you.
Yes, of course.
No one missed Matt, though.
No, no one did miss Matt. A few people did ask about him, though.
Yeah.
And
to make sure he was still alive.
I will say this. He was there for anyone who's listening.
Okay. Lurking.
I think there were one or two fans of the show that met Matt and didn't even realize that they had met him.
Wow.
Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. I don't know if Matt wants to talk more about it.
So Matt wasn't like lurking for his new victims or anything?
He was absolutely lurking. That's what he does. Especially at cons.
That's why we took him there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But we'll give Matt a moment here in a second. But why don't you tell everyone what's going on at Oxygen.com?
Yes, of course. So for the month of June, which we're currently in, it's Crimes of the 80s.
Nice.
We're 80s babies.
Absolutely.
It's this whole month. 2 weeks ago, we mentioned the Green River Killer, which happened in the 80s. Well, today, that's what we're diving into, people.
Not the actual river, but the murder.
Yes.
Right, we're not diving
just
into
like
the
we're
going to
give you a little geography lesson on where the Green River is. And that's it.
There you go. Well, Matt is back from CrimeCon to give us this week's drink of the week and to announce the murder that we will be covering, which you kind of just did. So excellent.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Matt, take it away. Here's the microphone. Now I have to get up off of this chair. By the way, the studio is completely different today. I don't know what happened here in the 2 weeks.
I don't know. I don't even know if I can work under these situations, under the circumstances. It's pretty dire here.
Hello, everybody. I have some notes with me. That's true. And the first thing my notes say is that I did not get anything from Darren from vacation. I'm very offended. Wow. Nothing. Okay. But so this week's case, it's a very prolific serial killer who dumped the bodies of his victims around the Green River in Washington State. Apropos of this, and he might actually be the most prolific serial killer in the history of the country. So the drink this week is called the Green Monster. It's 1 1/2 ounce white rum, 1 ounce green creme de menthe, and 1 ounce lemon juice. And I will say this, usually the drinks I make, I don't normally go all out, sometimes I do, but usually they're pretty good. This week, for the first time ever, I actually tested it last night. And
in the office.
No. I left work, bought the ingredients, went home and tested it, and it is the most disgusting drink I've ever made by far. I mean, it kind of fits because it's like medicine, and there's necrophilia in this, and you know, so like you kind of maybe could look at it that way. We need some.
That's exactly the image
some,
I want.
We need some medicine to sort of get through this one, but it's really gross. I'm sorry. I'm going to get a lot of shit for it, I'm sure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's all. Goodbye.
Thanks, Matt. I am excited to try it. What an intro. I'm sure all of you at home want to drink along with us today.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't want to make this, even though he gave us all the ingredients.
This might be the punishment for missing CrimeCon and not getting
That's
Matt anything
point.
From Barcelona.
By the way, Matt is making the drink behind us on the ground. Matt, you can bring it up here if you want to make. Oh, do you have it finished already?
No.
Okay, no.
Let him be on the ground where he deserves.
Darren's going to run this whole studio, apparently.
We're up here.
Yeah.
Matt's down there.
Very good. All right, well, here we go.
Go.
Oh, it's loud in my microphone. All right. Okay, so let's get into the murder because, well, first I want to taste this, so hopefully that martini shows up here.
I mean, if he does his job.
But yes, let's talk about it. Who is the Green River Killer? So on Sunday, August 5th, 1982, a fisherman was rafting down the Green River in Washington State when he made a grisly, disturbing discovery. Two bodies floating.
Mm-hmm.
Those bodies belonged to 31-year-old Marcia Chapman, who had been missing for 2 weeks, and 16-year-old Opal Mills, who had been missing for 3 days. Trying to look for evidence to prove whether the deaths were accidental or not, police found a third body on the banks of the river. The third body belonged to 17-year-old Cynthia Hines, or Hines,
I'm thinking Hines,
missing for 4 days. So three more bodies are eventually found in the area, with most of the women being around the same age and had all having been strangled to death. So that's
you're just on the river and you're like, things are popping up like landmines. I mean,
yeah.
Oh my God.
What? Oh, we need a photo of this on social media.
Let me just describe what was just served to us in our chalices.
Yes, chalices.
It's like, it's actually a very calming green.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a green lagoon type of green.
Or a green river.
Yeah. There doesn't seem to be, you know what would have been a good touch? If you had like little plastic bodies floating in this martini. But you know what, Matt? That's fine. I'll do your job for you.
Let's do a quick cheers, bitch.
Yeah, cheers bitch. Thanks,
to all
Matt.
Of us. Okay, I'm taking a quick little sip.
Ooh, it smells like medicine.
It does.
Okay. Actually, not that bad, Matt.
It's not as bad as he made it sound.
It isn't. I thought this was going to be like toxic waste bad.
Like cough syrup or something? Yeah. Let me take another
sip. It actually tastes a little refreshing. I got to be honest. Nat's little touch.
Is there mint in this? Is that what he said? Mint?
Yeah. Did he mask up all the, you know, drugs and stuff that he put in the... the martini with other things?
I have to say I like it, but I can already tell you with two sips, I cannot... Do not let me drink this entire thing. It's very strong.
Refill him, Matt.
I will end up on the ground, face planting in the studio by
the
end of the
hour. Or a floating body in the Green River, perhaps.
There you go. All right, well, let's get back to the details here. So, of course, recognizing that there was a serial killer on the loose, the media came up with the Green River Killer moniker to talk about these horrible deaths. The sheriff's department formed a task force to focus on catching the killer, with the FBI joining the investigation. Two top FBI profilers determined that the Green River Killer was a confident, middle-aged white man who would return to the crime scene to reenact murders in his head.
I wonder how they figured that out.
I know.
Like, how do you know the race?
This is how great the FBI is, I guess, you know? And these people that deal with these types of murders all the time, they can see sort of this kind of behavior and maybe patterns.
I mean, I will say that the middle-aged white male, Matt is obviously a usual murderer. Any middle-aged white male that I see, I'm like, oh, you're a murderer. You're getting up there, John.
They also said that he was probably familiar with the area, deeply religious, and like
how do they know that?
And likely to contact the police during the investigation. And so, yeah, it's just interesting. I think you guys listening, keep this information in your back pocket because it's going to come up a little bit later. Now, speaking of the scene, like you were just describing, they quickly determined all the murdered women knew each other as they all worked as prostitutes in the Seattle SeaTac area, which is a sketchy 10-mile stretch on the Pacific Highway around the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. So just to give a little setting here, if you're familiar with the Seattle area, we have some people that have worked with us
who determined it was sketchy.
They were like, absolutely a very sketchy place. So there you go.
We got first-hand knowledge of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, police began interviewing hundreds of women working on the SeaTac Strip, looking for Johns who stood out. Now, granted, my podcast partner's name is John.
That's correct.
But John, in this case, is going to be used as the name, you know, like a pimp, like a John, a guy who kind of manages the prostitutes. So we're going to try and do our best to not refer to John Thrasher as opposed to the prostitute pimping Johns.
Yes. Oh, Matt's whispering.
John.
Our clients?
Johns are clients or are they the boss? I thought Johns were like controlling the prostitutes, no? Okay, so Johns are the clients.
Well, either way, John always gets a bad rap. I hate having this name sometimes. I don't know many cool Johns out there.
Fair.
I guess I'm the coolest one, what I have to say.
So my mistake, they're looking for Johns who hire prostitutes, who solicit prostitution, who stood out.
Got it.
So one young prostitute told them that she filed a rape report against a client who had referenced the Green River murders. On August 20th, 1982, police made an arrest, but only one day later announced it wasn't the murderer they were looking for.
Okay.
All right. So
this will be a repeating thing that happens throughout the show.
It always feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The following day, 16-year-old Terry Milligan is abducted from the SeaTac Strip. Her remains were found 20 months later, which seems a little surprising. It seemed like it took a little while to find her remains, considering the other people on the Green River, they were found 4 days later, days. 2 weeks later.
And she was 16. That's, I think, important to mention.
Absolutely. Even with the state's largest manhunt after him, the killer brazenly continued to hunt.
Yeah. Yeah, so this killer was all over the media, yeah. had a recognizable monster type of name, and was still so confident that he was going to get away with it that he just continued to hunt and kill his victims.
Which the police, or at least the FBI profilers kind of predicted when they yeah, said, like, he's right. confident enough to even call the exactly. authorities. So it does really fit the profile that they had established from right. the beginning.
So in September of 1982, police met Susan Widmark, who was 21. Widmark told them she was solicited by a John in a blue and white truck. Go. For the record, my dad used to have a blue and white truck, and his name is John, but it is not this person. The John took her to a secluded road and raped her at gunpoint. Afterwards, he started talking about the Green River killings, but at a traffic light, Susan jumped out of the truck and ran, which is, like, incredible to have that kind of courage and, you know, willingness to jump away from that situation. I mean, you're risking your life.
Absolutely.
Miraculously, she managed to get a couple of numbers from his license plate, too. Another girl, 15-year-old Deborah Estes, told police a similar story. Again, 15 years old. These are kids.
Yeah.
She was hitchhiking when a man in a blue and white truck picked her up. His actions were similar, taking her down a secluded road and then raping her. Afterwards, he handcuffed her and had her run into a wooded area. So that's kind of creepy, just that alone.
Yeah, let alone handcuffed. Running right. into a wooded area is scary enough.
Exactly. Soon after these reports, police found the blue and white truck and arrested the driver, a local butcher named Charles Clinton Clark. Now, Clark was known for having sex with prostitutes from the Strip. Both Susan and Deborah were able to identify Clark as the man who raped them from his driver's license photo.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So when they searched his truck and home, police found two handguns that Clark used when raping the women. Clark eventually confessed to the rapes but denied being the Green River Killer. So a lot of similar types of
crime is happening, yeah.
Happening. But so then when Clark's behind bars, Mary Meehan, 19, disappeared from the Strip, proof that the killer was not Clark and was still at large. So I don't want to say it was a copycat crime necessarily, but there were similar things going on here, and they thought they had this guy, and then it's still going on.
Yeah. So they at least got some guy who was a shitty person, but at
true.
Least just not the shitty person that they were looking
Precisely.
For.
Precisely.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
So by October 1982, police began to suspect an out-of-work taxi driver, Melvin Wayne Foster, who was 44 years old and volunteered to help in the case. Mm. By the way, you ever notice how so many of these murders have three names? Like, they always use
yeah,
the
they
middle
do.
Name.
That's true.
Melvin Wayne Foster, yeah. all that. Remember the FBI profile of the killer said he was likely to be interested in police work, call the police, help out. So this does fit the description so far.
Yeah.
Foster already had a record for auto theft and was regularly in the SeaTac Strip area. It doesn't help his case that he knew five of the victims, too.
Oh, interesting. He just happened to know five of the victims.
Yeah, who are all very, very young. So, and he's 44.
Yeah.
Okay? Keep that in mind. So police actually started shadowing him basically 24/7, including installing hidden cameras at his house and searching it twice.
I do want to say that when I read this whenever we were doing the production meeting, I was like, can you imagine, like, what if for some reason...
I know, there's cameras in our house.
I know, like, for some reason, I fit the description of somebody who did something wrong, right?
Right.
And at any point, they can just come and put hidden cameras all around and follow your every move, and you have no idea. I feel like this happens more often than we probably think it does.
See, I don't... I thought... yeah, I don't know how that works.
Me
how,
either.
Like, they can just bust in and sort of start recording anything. I mean, I know you can't record something that isn't relevant, so it's like...
Yeah.
If you're listening into them having sex, they have to turn it off. Or something that isn't relevant to the case.
Sure.
But, like, that is so eerie. And you always see it on TV.
And in the 80s, I feel like there weren't nearly as many, like, laws and protections maybe around privacy and how those things kind of came about. I don't know for sure. I'm just opining here.
I mean, you're probably right. I mean, now in terms of social media, even what, like, sounds weird, but what Katy Perry's doing, how she's living in that house with 41 cameras around her, I'm like, that's my, like, living
nightmare.
I can't imagine volunteering to do this,
just putting
let alone not knowing.
Just putting our voices out there in the world is enough.
Is
you
enough.
Know what I
mean? Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, so keep going.
So they searched it twice, hidden cameras all over. They also took hair and blood samples from him and administered a polygraph test, which he failed.
Interesting.
Unable to find enough evidence to arrest him for the murders, police arrested him for unpaid parking tickets.
And I
pay your parking tickets, people.
And I have to say, if they're willing to arrest him for parking tickets, then I should probably be behind bars. Because when I was in college, I had so many parking tickets. And if you're a Morgantown, West Virginia parking officer, please turn off this episode now, because I feel like there may be unpaid parking
tickets.
You
owe the town like $10,000.
I'm sure I do.
So while Foster was actually in custody, three more women were killed. Shonda Summers, 17, Denise Bush, 23, and Shirley Sherrill, tough name to say, 18. So police let him go. Police put together a composite sketch with the help of a witness who saw Shirley, one of the victims, talking to a white male in a pickup truck. But this doesn't do anything to help them find a suspect, and the trail just goes cold.
Yeah, and so basically more girls go missing. So on Sunday, April 17th, 1983, Kimmy Kai Pitzer, 16, a child, was working on the streets. You know, so there's clearly a prostitution issue very early on.
Like, what was going on in the 80s? And that, I mean, maybe it was everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't see it as much anymore. But, like, that specific area...
A hotbed of terrible
especially
things.
That young.
I know. That's what I'm saying. A lot of these kids, 16, 15, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Her pimp watched her get into a dark pickup truck with a camper shell on the back. Now, we'd had a brief discussion yesterday in our production meeting about how creepy camper shells are. And for those who don't know, I feel like in case you live in an area where you don't see camper shells.
Which I didn't know what a camper shell was.
It basically is a... camper, it's literally like a shell that goes on the back of a pickup truck so that you can then drive your pickup truck and camp in the back of your bed, in the bed of the truck. So
it kind of looks like it's part of the truck, though.
Exactly.
Like when you look at images, it doesn't really look that weird.
Yeah.
I actually have seen them before. I just
didn't know what they were. Yeah.
Or didn't know that was like an add-on.
Well, and they're such a creepy thing because there's usually like very slim, tiny little windows.
Yeah, so it's like a rape van.
It's basically the perfect thing that you would need for something like that. But anyway, after 7 hours, Kimmy did not return. Kimmy's pimp called the police, who were able to generate a composite sketch of the driver's face, which the pimp described as pockmarked, but they had no matches. So on April 30th, 1983, Marie Malvar, 18, also working the streets, was picked up by a dark pickup. Marie's boyfriend and pimp watched from a close distance. So, you know, she's working the streets. She has a boyfriend. She has a pimp. There's a lot of different things going on here. As Marie got into the pickup, she appeared to get into a fight with the driver. The pickup sped off, and Marie's boyfriend followed in his own car, but unfortunately, he was caught by a stoplight and lost the pickup. But I'm also, like, not to, like, put anything against
it. But, like, break the red light.
Yeah, go through the red light. They're speeding away with someone you love. He called the police, but there was little that they could do with the information that they had at the time. 3 days later, a search party, including Marie's boyfriend and family, saw the pickup truck again when they were out looking for her. The search party followed the truck to a house and called the police. The police questioned the resident of the house, Gary Ridgway, 34. Ridgway denies knowing Marie, and for some reason, police believed him. So let's get into
who he is,
who Gary Ridgway is.
So before I get to that, the Green River Killer had killed 26 women in Seattle that police knew of by the end of spring of 1983. That is a huge number, by the way.
Yeah.
This is clearly someone who is successful at his craft and has gotten away with a lot of stuff.
So, knows how to get away with
it. And that's only what they knew of. Yeah. So who knows? You know, there could be people anywhere.
Right.
So Gary Ridgway was the police latest suspect, as we had just said. And Ridgway had a weird life, but he was actually pretty normal by all accounts. He was raised in the Seattle area, so he was a local.
Mm-hmm.
His father was a bus driver who would tell him about whores and tell Gary to stay away from them. So that's kind of an interesting way to grow up.
Yeah. interesting advice from your dad.
Interesting. even weirder, Ridgway both hated and was sexually attracted to his own mother, according to sources, which is an Oedipus complex, if I've ever heard one. But you have heard of a lot of, you know, even when we discuss the East Area rapist, maybe this is a West Coast thing. Remember, he'd kind of call out for mommy and do these things, and it was very psychological. So perhaps, you know,
good
there's
connection.
Something tied in there with the way that they're thinking.
And you guys can listen to those. Those are episodes 1 and 2 of our podcast.
Yeah, hating and being sexually attracted to someone. There's some wire that's crossing that doesn't seem to be correct, especially when if it's your own mother.
Right.
At age 16, he lured a 6-year-old boy into the woods and stabbed him because he wanted to see what it would be like to kill somebody.
Unreal.
He's 16, okay, luring a little boy into there and killing him. According to Fox News, that victim, who did survive, said Gary had asked him if he wanted to build a fort, then stabbed him in the liver. The victim said Gary laughed and wiped the blood off the blade on the boy's shoulder, which, when we were reading about this, just so disturbed me, the fact that it was like as if it was the most callous move ever. I mean, thank God the boy survived.
Right, that's what I was going
to say. But just, like, the concept of him wiping his own blood.
It also serves as a great sort of you know, like you get the sense he's starting to learn what his limits are, maybe, you know?
Exactly. And a lot of killers, you know, they start by killing animals or something like this. To do this at 16, something is not right. Ridgway was briefly in the Navy until he married his first wife in 1970, but was divorced by 72. So it didn't last too long.
Mm-hmm.
His second marriage, however, lasted from 73 to 81. And during his second marriage, he became a religious convert and preached to people going door to door to read out loud from the Bible.
That's crazy.
That, you know, just to kind of like convert. I don't really know if his wife was like that or what happened there, but that's what happened. So he was frequenting prostitutes in the Seattle area. I like that he was like reading out loud from the Bible, but also soliciting prostitutes at the same time. It seems
double life going on.
Yeah. In July 1980, Ridgway was arrested for choking a prostitute near the Strip, but charges were dropped.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Charges were dropped. He said that he choked the woman, I think, in self-defense or something.
I mean...
When she bit him.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not laughing, but it's like, I don't know. Why?
How you can just let that go?
We'll get into this later on. It's like, all the signs are here, and it's like,
Falling through the cracks or something.
And what do we do as a society when all signs point to something and nobody's doing anything about it?
Agreed.
Anyway.
Well, in 82, he actually was found guilty of soliciting a prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
And on another occasion, an undercover police officer posing as a prostitute, so he solicited her as well.
Okay, so he was trying, we were laughing about this before because I could not figure this out. So he was trying to pose.
I'll explain it. So Gary Ridgway was soliciting a prostitute. That prostitute happened to be an undercover police officer. Who was posing as a prostitute.
I get it. Matt is probably
happy. Matt, do you agree that that's how I explained it? Okay, he's happy in the back and he's nodding. Okay.
I totally get it now.
Yeah, so that prostitute happened to be an undercover police officer.
Got it.
And that's that person was solicited by Gary Ridgway.
Well, that's why I was so confused because the way I was reading it was that he was posing as the police officer.
Yes.
And I'm like, that's not, what? How does that even happen?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
So regardless, Ridgway actually managed to blend into his middle class neighborhood. Mm-hmm. He had a job, was married, seemed somewhat harmless, yeah. like they always seemed normal. Of Gary's marriage, his coworker and best friend said, quote, they were a very loving and affectionate couple. It was a match made in heaven. His wife, Judith Mawson, was smitten with him, they said, which is cute.
Yeah.
On February 23rd, 1983, before Marie went missing, police stopped Ridgway in his pickup with prostitute Kelly McGinnis. Ridgway said they were on a date, and police let him go.
Is that how easy it is? Like, I'm so confused about why they didn't question him more. But okay.
Yeah, and he's solicit.
Yeah, I don't know.
So 4 months later, Kelly actually disappeared, and her body has never been found.
Oh.
But police weren't actually sure if Ridgway was the killer.
Yeah.
Despite this, his van matched the description of the vehicle that picked up both Marie and Kimmy.
All right. Well, let's try to figure out if Gary is actually the killer here. So by the end of 1983. 38 women had been murdered. The stakes were obviously shockingly high. The killer had also stopped dumping bodies in the Green River and started throwing them in and around Star Lake, which is near SeaTac Airport. In February 1984, police found 4 women and children along the Star Lake Road. Terry Milligan, 16, Alma Smith, 18, Dolores Williams, 17, and Sandra Gabbert, 17. Near the bodies, they also found a shoe impression with a men's size 10 or 11. Now, I don't know if you want to check right now, but I'm guessing that Matt's shoe size might be 10 or 11.
Matt,
can you confirm such things?
10. It's a 10.
I don't know. It's just something to think about. This is the first piece of forensic evidence from the murderer.
Which is shocking.
Yeah, no, it
is. Because with all the numbers of people, of all the women bodies that have been found even by Green River, to not even find a shoe print or a tissue, anything, is kind of surprising.
And so I thought this was so interesting. Police began consulting with serial killer Ted Bundy while he was in a Florida prison. Obviously, Bundy, having some experience in this kind of thing, advised them that the new disposal site was probably closer to the killer's home. I mean, Bundy obviously was killing people at this point, knew what the mind of a killer was like.
I mean, that's smart. I mean, unless Bundy was, you know, kind of like making sure that they didn't get the evidence and kind of like misconstruing. I think that's very smart to ask someone, because you need to know the mind of a killer.
I like the way that you think about things, because I didn't even think about like maybe he was throwing them off.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible.
Now listen, I'm skeptical, but the way you kind of process that, I thought was interesting.
Yeah, maybe he was fucking with them. But,
yeah, maybe.
You know, at the same time, he really had nothing to lose
by true.
It. So I, you know, who knows?
Well, police created a triangle around the area and, as expected, found Ridgway's home was located within this red zone.
Mm-hmm.
So on Monday, May 7th, 1984, police subjected Ridgway to a lie detector test. They asked him if he had ever caused the death of a prostitute, and Ridgway said no. Ridgway went on to pass the test. However, many prostitutes interviewed by police recalled seeing Ridgway at the strip frequently. More damning still, Ridgway was absent from work on every day a prostitute went missing.
Every day a prostitute went missing.
And, you know, I don't know if you listened to Matt's laughing in the background. You know, I used to think that circumstantial evidence like this wasn't enough. You know, we've talked about, you know, you need to have a very clear path to someone being convicted if you're going to put them away for such a heinous thing. But when you have so much of it, how can the police look away? Kelly Siegler from Cold Justice really made me rethink the way I look at circumstantial evidence after last week's episode.
Well, I think to ignore it is stupid. I mean, maybe it's not the only thing that you need. Maybe not knowing that he was out every day is enough to convict him. But it's certainly an important fact that should be presented.
Totally, yeah. So when police interviewed Ridgway's second wife, she told them something very disturbing, which was that Ridgway liked to have sex where the Green River Killer's victims' bodies were found. So disturbing.
Not only that, but like, how does she know that?
Well, maybe they would go and.
But
do
like,
that.
Why would she like? Why,
I agree.
You know,
why even go there?
Why, yeah.
Well, on Wednesday, April 8th, 1987, police seized hundreds of Ridgway's personal possessions from his home, work, and van. Police also took a saliva swab from Ridgway for DNA testing. Now, remember, this is the 80s.
Yeah,
I think it's just kind of getting its grounds. It's sort of becoming a new technology, a new science, I guess you could say. But like I said, it wasn't very advanced, and they weren't able to link the DNA to any of the victims. So despite all this information and circumstantial evidence, the trail to Ridgway went cold. And you have to wonder how many killers got away with murder before DNA science was developed.
You really do. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this many times, and I've even said, like, the Innocence Project, which I donate to, which gets people off from DNA evidence.
DNA, yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that are on death row, for example, who actually are innocent. But it is crazy to think about the people who have been walking around that do –
yeah.
Because they hit it at the right time, you know, before technology advanced, how many people really are there out there?
I know. It's kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So by 1988, the year that yours truly was born, 41 women now have been strangled to death. And by the end of that year, police had a new suspect, pharmacology student William J. Stevens, 37. Several tips were called into Crime Stoppers about Stevens. He'd been on the run for about 8 years after serving 2 years for burglary. Police investigations found that Stevens had contempt for prostitutes and had talked about killing them. But when they searched his home, police found firearms, fraudulent credit cards, photographs of nude prostitutes. Stephen was taken into police custody.
So he's a fucking creep is what we're saying here.
Yeah, I mean, considering the fact that he had contempt for prostitutes but had a house full of naked photographs is, you know, that's cause for concern.
Fair.
However, Stephen's brother promptly came in with travel and credit card records that provided airtight alibis, and he was released. In other words, there's no way it was him, and here are the travel receipts and credit card receipts to prove
it. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. So in 91, after 9 years of investigations and $15 million spent, the Green River Killer Task Force disbanded. The biggest manhunt in U.S. history went cold.
But all hope wasn't lost because the case reopens 10 years later in 2001. Police had new DNA technology that wasn't available the first time around. The first thing they did was reanalyze all the available DNA and forensic data, starting with samples from three victims recovered between 82 and 83. And they had Gary Ridgway's saliva from 1987. So that's good. They were able to, like, keep that stuff safe and
definitely
good to go. On September 10th, 2001, the results came back. All three samples from the victims matched Gary Ridgway. On Friday, November 30th, 2001, the police arrested Ridgway as he was driving home from work. He was charged with the murders of Marcia Chapman, Opal Mills, Carol Christensen, and Cynthia Hines. Over the next 18 months, law enforcement built their case, but in June of 2003, Ridgway struck a deal with prosecutors. In return for taking the death penalty off of the table, Ridgway agreed to give them complete details about the murders and locations of the bodies. So, okay.
He's recognizing here that he's
been caught.
Yeah, he's been caught. Let's see what information I can provide at least to keep myself alive a little bit more.
Fair, yeah. A King County sheriff told CNN, quote, "The majority of the families were understanding and in agreement that it was probably the best decision given the circumstances in order that the other 41 families would have the same resolution." So, of course, the families would, I'm sure, love to see him put to death for this. They're basically saying, we would love to put, you know, put a bow, not a bow, but kind of close the door with these, I'm sure.
They want closure, yeah, first closure. And foremost, I think, as opposed to, you know, as long as he's in jail and he's caught and he can't keep doing this, I think the justice isn't getting the closure here.
A prosecutor said, quote, justice and mercy for the victims, the family, and our community, and that is why we entered into this agreement. So over the course of 5 months, Ridgway debriefed investigators on all of his crimes. He told them, quote, I only killed women that accepted the money. I thought I was doing you guys a favor, killing prostitutes. You guys can't control them, but I can. Ridgway said he targeted prostitutes, quote, because I thought I could kill as many as I wanted without getting caught.
And yet he thought he was doing police work by killing these prostitutes. So not sure his reasoning really adds up.
And, you know, that gives a great indication of, like, where his mind is and his motives, I guess. Ridgway's M.O. was to target a prostitute working on the highway, watch her from a distance before driving up and trying to pick her up. To give them a sense of security, he'd show his ID or, like, a picture of his son. And then, of course, they'd drive somewhere secluded to have sex. And then he'd strangle the woman from behind, either in his van or in his house. I mean, this is so disturbing to feel like you're in a comfortable, like, almost in a vulnerable position like this with another man. And then from behind, you know, you're being strangled. It's terrible.
And what's weird is that it's... Yes, you'd think that being shown an ID gives you a sense of comfort. But now looking back to a lot of the scary movies that I see, usually when they reveal their identity or reveal who they are, it's because they know they can get away with something and you're not going to live to tell the tale.
Oh, God, that's a good point. He said he did it this way because, quote, I just didn't like blood. I didn't like the blood part of it or the knife. Oh, okay.
Oh, okay, cool.
Cool. I'm glad that you were thinking of yourself.
So he's
first.
Clean.
Right, exactly.
Great.
In this, in his plea bargain papers, he also said, quote, choking is what I did and I was pretty good at it. So just no remorse at all. He was proud of his little skill set here with
this
knife.
Thought this was like a job.
Yeah. Ridgway would often also take the woman's money and jewelry. Ridgway admitted placing the bodies in, quote, clusters, usually near a landmark that helped him remember their locations. Quote, I did this because I wanted to keep track of all the women I killed. I like to drive by the clusters around the county and think about the women I placed there, end quote.
So fucked up.
So in another disgusting twisted confession, he says that he told police sometimes he'd go back to the disposal sites and have sex with the dead victims. I mean... You know, he'd buried the bodies to stop himself from being able to have sex with them again. I mean, this is literally the most disturbing. These are the most disturbing details that you could really have in a crime.
Yeah, so he had sex with his wife and the dead bodies in the same area.
Allegedly, I guess so. This had us wondering in our production meeting yesterday. We were really debating this. Can you catch a disease by having sex with dead bodies? If you're a professional listening to this show and know the answer, please let us know.
Because it's one of those things you don't want to do a Google search at work.
No,
you
definitely
know what I mean?
Don't.
Like, really feel like someone's going to catch us on that Google search. Like, hey, P.S.
We'd be sitting in an NBCU HR session.
Yeah, they'd be like, Darren, you do great work, but why are you looking up if you can get an STD from having sex with a dead body?
By the way, Darren, you work in reality television, so how does this apply?
And what am I going to say? Like, curiosity. Like, that's, I'm fucked up now.
In the summer and fall of 2003, Ridgway took police to many locations where he dumped bodies. And on Wednesday, November 5th, 2003, Ridgway made his confession to killing 48 women in court. He did not show any emotion whatsoever and told the court he killed, quote, so many women I have a hard time keeping them straight, end quote. Me wondering, like, did he feel free to talk about them like this because he knew that he wasn't going to get the death penalty? You know, does that open up this, like, freedom to speak however you want?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, now he kind of wants to brag about his, as he said, I mean, he felt no remorse. He kind of looked at it as, like, a skill set.
Right.
So maybe he did think this was a really good opportunity for him to show off and get the attention that he clearly so dearly wanted.
At that time, it was the largest confirmed number of killings by a serial killer in U.S. history.
Yep.
Ridgway was sentenced to 48 consecutive life terms and an extra 480 years for tampering with evidence. So
he ain't getting
out. He's not getting out anytime soon. Nancy Gabbard, whose 17-year-old daughter Sandra was killed in 1983, said, quote, Gary Ridgway is an evil creature who I would condemn to many, many long years of anguish and despair, that's obviously a reasonable quote.
Yes.
When you're the mom. In 2011, Ridgway also pled guilty to the murder of Becky Marrero after her remains were discovered. Ridgway says he killed 75 to 80 women altogether, but police have been unable to confirm this. Again, 80 women? I mean, how do you even have time to meet that many people, let alone strangle and kill them?
And more importantly, I mean, it's hard to know the time frame of the 75, 80 right. women allegedly, but, like, you're a married man living in a, you know, a relatively small community. Yeah. Like, how is no one?
Yeah.
You're just like, you're totally normal. Yeah. Like, you come home as if it's like an end of a work day. It's crazy to me.
A reporter who interviewed Ridgway for KOMO News Radio, or KOMO News Radio, said, quote, "The strange thing about Gary Ridgway is if you didn't know the depravity, if you didn't know the evil that this man committed, you would have no clue when you talked on the phone with him. This man sounds like he would be a perfect neighbor. Gary Ridgway is absolutely playing me. He's playing everybody when he talks. I don't think Gary Ridgway can even comprehend the truth. I think he wants to show the world that, quote, here I am, Gary Ridgway, the truck painter from Kenworth, the guy who everybody thought was slow since elementary school, somebody who couldn't hold a candle to Ted Bundy, but here I am the best at something." End
Which
quote.
Might be true.
Yeah.
Because he did look at it as a skill set. And, like, right. even the stuff that we were talking about with the weird thing with his mother,
right.
it all kind of fits in now looking back.
I mean, we also talk so often about how the people that do these types of murders are just your normal run-of-the-mill type of folks.
Or at least appear that way to the naked eye.
That's true, yeah. Gary Ridgway was sentenced, of course, to 48 life terms and is serving his time at the Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla. So, yeah, another disturbing case where someone seems to not understand the consequences of their action.
And that's far, because I think my brother's roommate in college was from Walla Walla, and that's like 6 hours to the closest airport. That's like rural Washington State.
Oh, my God.
So he's not getting out.
No,
he's not going anywhere.
Thank God, too. And, you know, we were debating earlier in the production meeting whether we should mention all these names, because it's like there's so many names.
I mean, 48 women confirmed, right. let alone the other 40 that probably aren't.
Right. And, you know, they're women and children. A lot of these kids are 15, 16, 17. But we really thought, you know, when we're talking on the show, we should mention the names, because a lot of time you only hear about the killers of these people and not the people that were the victims who we should actually be paying tribute to.
Well, that's the thing. You know, we don't want to glorify the killer any more than they already want to be glorified. And it really
right.
is about the victim.
Totally,
I mean,
yeah.
there's so many docs that I've watched where it's like, I don't care about the murder. I care really about the victims.
Yeah,
that are,
totally.
I mean,
and
our
families.
Show is Martinis and Murder, so you want to know about it. But I do think it is important to, like, honor their names as well as their fucking ages, because they were so young.
Yeah, totally. So that's that. And speaking of honoring, let's honor some listener shout-outs.
Okay.
So Heidi, in a true crime Facebook group that I just joined, by the way. I've been joining them because they're so much fun and I get to see what people are talking about. She says, "Huge Martinis and Murder fan here. This group is the perfect place to be. Welcome and thank you for one of my favorite podcasts."
That's so sweet. Thank you, Heidi.
Yeah.
Ian on Twitter actually made a drinking game graphic that we just retweeted. He says, "So I made something introducing the Martinis and Murder drink along at home. Home game, hashtag cheers, bitch. I hope the lawyers don't contact me." Well, we've got the lawyers on the line.
They're on the line.
They're currently contacting you,
They're
Ian.
Not happy, Ian.
They've got nothing else to do.
Yeah.
They're not busy. All they want to do is fuck with our fans.
Absolutely.
That's what they said to me.
They said that right before we came on the air. I thought it was so rude.
It's so nasty.
Yeah,
so rude.
Well,
Ashley on Twitter actually says, "Can't get enough crime with Martinis and Murder. Love you both, Jay Thrasher and Carpe Darren. We need more martinis in our lives. Cheers, bitch." You don't need this martini in your life.
No, I don't know that you do. It's a little too strong.
Maybe another one.
I want to read a couple of the drink along at home things that Ian came up with here,
because
they're actually really funny. But before we get into this drinking game, we must always say, please drink responsibly. Drink along at home if, you know, take a sip if the word allegedly is used.
That probably happened like 4 times.
A million times. John coincidentally has a personal tie to a case. That happened
every
today.
Time.
You hear a martini shaker. That happened today. Take a gulp if Darren drops the F-bomb, which you did today.
That always happens.
Or Matt whispers something from the shadows. Again, happened today. John agrees with Darren by saying, that's a really good point. Interesting. I have said that a few times today.
Well, to be fair, I do make excellent points that are interesting.
You make a lot of excellent points. Absolutely. Take a shot if a word is slurred on air. I would say that
nothing happened.
No,
today.
Maybe not today. There was one episode, the Kristen Smart episode, where we were just both drunk.
Yeah.
Here's one for the lawyers. Take a shot if the lawyers get a shout out.
Okay.
All right.
We kind of
go. Whether they like those shout outs or not.
So by those
matter.
Rules, you'd be throwing up, sort of.
I know, that's true.
And we're only halfway through.
Take a shot if the duo recalls what they were doing when a crime unfolds. We kind of mentioned this earlier.
Well, we didn't say it because it happened in 82.
But 88, yes. Okay. And bottoms up if Matt suspiciously grabs a weapon. Peelers count. Does he have a weapon?
No, he's got nothing. Although he's thinking now.
He's thinking of something.
Really...
I can feel him behind yes. me looking for something. Bottoms up if Darren and John perfectly reenact dialogue
he's
from a case.
He's got a sandbag now.
Oh, God. Why is there a sandbag in here? I'm nervous. Bottoms up if Darren and John perfectly reenact dialogue from a case.
Well, that's perfect.
That sometimes we do that. And lastly, bottoms up if you have literally thought the exact same thing as one of the listener shout-outs at the end of the podcast. So,
amen. Thank you, Ian.
Because this is a listener shout-out, we shouted you out, you better be bottomsing up your martini right now.
Amen.
Thanks, Ian, for that. That was really funny. And lastly, Andy on Twitter says, I'm so excited about Martinis and Murder. Finally, a true crime podcast hosted by members of my LGBT family. Hashtag cheers, bitches.
Yes.
And happy Pride Month, by the way. I have my rainbow Apple Watch.
I see it. Happy Pride Month.
Yeah.
Yes.
We love hearing those shout outs. So
thank
you, guys.
We should have done, like, gay killers or
Maybe
something.
Maybe we should do something around Pride Month.
That's impossible.
Month.
That was a trick question. Gays are perfect.
They've never killed anybody.
That was a trick question, John.
Absolutely. There you go. Cold Justice is returning to Oxygen. Kelly Siegler and her team will return for the season premiere on July 22nd at 8, 7 Central.
Of course, new episodes of Snapped air every Sunday at 6 and 9 on Oxygen.
And we can't give anything away yet, but we are working on some new and exciting ways for you guys to interact with us and with the show.
Can we give it away yet?
I know. We can't do it yet. We're still waiting on legal to, you know,
the lawyers again.
The lawyers don't want us to have fun. I don't know if you've noticed
Are they even really listening?
I don't know. Let's see. Lawyers, are you there? Should you make your debut right now? No?
No. See, I told you they don't even listen they to the damn up. Show.
They're smart though because they know. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. What was that movement? Are you here? Excellent.
They're pissed,
so we have
to go now.
Oh, my God. Yes. So funny. But stay tuned because what's coming up with the show is going to be so fun. Let's do one last little cheers, bitch.
Cheers, bitch.
Matt's behind us.
Already drank his gross, toxic green ways. It's already bottoms up.
There you go. See you guys next week.
Bye.